Welcome back into the Congressional Corner. I'm Andrew Waite, and with me today is Democratic Congresswoman Becca Ballant, Vermont's at-large Congresswoman since 2023. Congresswoman Ballant, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Let's talk about the shutdown. You've recently held some events where you've been talking directly to Vermonters about this. What are you hearing from them?
Most Vermonters really do understand the stakes of this moment. They are already facing health care bills that they absolutely cannot afford. And this particular moment is really about holding the line around health care. The so-called Big Beautiful Bill that was passed earlier this year by the Republicans took almost $1 trillion out of the budget for Medicaid. It triggered a reduction in Medicare. You've got tariffs that are increasing the price of prescription drugs. And now the ACA subsidies that many Americans rely on to be able to afford their health care will expire at the end of this year. And many folks have already seen their premiums going up. They see what they'll be paying in the new year. And the sticker shock is quite remarkable. In some instances, you will see people's premiums doubling, and most working families can't afford that. So Vermonters overwhelmingly have been supportive of my position on this, as well as the two senators, Senator Sanders and Senator Welch. We feel like the Republicans need to deal with this health care crisis now, especially since the bill that they passed earlier this year helped to create the crisis that we're in right now. So I'm hearing a lot of support, but also a lot of anxiety and fear. People can't afford their health care as it is, and this is going to make it dramatically worse.
What do you say to someone who would argue that the Affordable Care Act subsidies and health care costs generally should be addressed separately, that funding the government should be a separate matter, and we should handle health care costs in different legislation?
Well, the thing is, people are making decisions right now about whether they're going to continue their coverage through the Affordable Care Act. Okay, they're getting the estimates for what their health care costs are going to be. This is exactly the time when we need to have it. And, you know, I have a really hard time with folks who don't admit that that Democrats have repeatedly come together with Republicans in the last 3 years under this speaker, Speaker Johnson, and now under this president, and we have made deals. And what President Trump has done is to go around Congress to make rescissions on deals we've already made, not stand up for deals. Even some Republicans last week were saying publicly, yeah, I see why Democrats don't want to make a deal right now, because the president does not follow through and claws back money that we have already dedicated to programs. So no, now is the time to have this, when people are seeing their health care costs go up right before their eyes. And we continue hearing from Republicans promises from their leadership. They never follow through on it. We need to make this crystal clear to Americans right now what it is that is going to be happening on healthcare, and we need to improve their situation materially right now.
Are you confident that Americans will get that message and that the blame will not be placed on the Democrats?
I am confident that people understand that for 15 years, the Republican Party has tried to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. 15 years, 10 Excuse me, not 10, 100 votes in Congress to try to destroy, dismantle, defund the Affordable Care Act. Turns out more Republican states rely more strongly on Affordable Care Act subsidies than so-called blue states. And so, yes, I saw Speaker Johnson get an earful when he was on a C-SPAN call-in show from a Republican constituent who said, you are out of touch with what regular families are dealing with around health care. And word is getting out, whether it is, you know, you were talking about, you know, who's to blame. For me, this is about fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. And the problem was overwhelmingly created by what happened in the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, and we need to fix it. We need to repair the cuts that were made that are bringing the healthcare system to the brink of collapse, certainly here in Vermont and in so many other rural areas.
Yeah, and there's been some conversation about maybe just fighting for an extension of these subsidies that might only, you know, last another year rather than a permanent extension. I mean, are you open to that kind of compromise? Do you worry about the perfect being the enemy of the good in any way?
Well, here's something I want to point out. The tax cuts that were made that caused this problem to begin with, that sucked almost $1 billion out of the Medicaid system, those tax cuts are permanent. And so for them to come back and say, oh, we'll give you a one-year extension on this, Republicans have been promising for 15 years that they're going to come up with an alternative to these subsidies, and they never have anything to show for it. So no, I'm not inclined to support something that continues to make these tax breaks for the very wealthy permanent, while the rest of us only get a one-year reprieve. But certainly these are conversations that we're going to have in caucus and with our leadership team. But, you know, I really want people to understand who is winning out from the policies that this president has been following in the last 10 months. Who's winning out and who's losing? And I can tell you, it's not working people and middle-class people. So we've got to do a course correction here.
And I wanted to turn, you serve on the House Judiciary Committee, and there's been a few items in the news to do with that committee recently, but I wanted to check in on the Tom Homan bribery investigation, and Democrats on that committee are pushing for more information or for more to come out or a further investigation. Can you bring us up to speed? What's going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. So for those of you who don't know, might be listening, our current head of Homeland, I guess, what's
the border czar?
I was going to say border czar. I was like, is that his name? Yes. So Tom Homan, the border czar. He was caught on tape accepting a $50,000 bribe in literally in a paper bag. This was before the President Trump took office. Cash Patel at the FBI decided not to pursue the case. You had Pam Bondi, the AG, in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She refused to answer any questions about this. And we can't even find out, what did he do with the $50,000 that he accepted as a bribe? Did the FBI get that back? How was the money spent? What was the protocol by which they decided to dismiss that case? And we know that there is, at the very least, audio tape. We believe there's also videotape. And I'm sure both the Judiciary Committee and our Oversight Committee Democrats are going to continue to push for this. But this is absurd. You don't have somebody who's accepted a $50,000 bribe in a paper bag just walk off scot-free, not answering any questions about what's happened. We don't know what happened to the money. And then to have the AG sitting before the Judiciary Committee refusing to answer questions about it is outrageous. And this administration is the least transparent, I think, of the last 100 years. They are so secretive. I was sitting in the Judiciary Committee when Cash Patel came to testify, another person who's supposed to come and answer questions. He spent the entire time dodging our questions, not answering our questions. They work for the American people.
And just to say, Tom Homan has maintained his innocence in this. I'm going to have to cut it off there, unfortunately. Congresswoman Becca Ballant of Vermont, the at-large congresswoman in that state, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your perspective.
Welcome.
Welcome back into the Congressional Corner. I'm Andrew Wade, and with me today is Democratic Congresswoman Becca Ballant, Vermont's at-large congresswoman since 2023. Congresswoman Ballant, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
So I wanted to start In 2022, you were elected as the first woman and first openly LGBTQ plus person to represent Vermont in Congress. Fast forward here to 2025, and the Supreme Court is hearing arguments on whether to allow conversion therapy. What do you make of this kind of whiplash?
So look, I do feel like this Supreme Court is profoundly, I think, out of touch with Americans. But they are following the lead of President Trump and other Republicans who have been actively demonizing and dehumanizing members of the LGBTQ plus community for years now. And conversion therapy has been discredited. It is a deceptive practice that hurts patients and their families. It is not about getting somebody well. It is about imposing your religious or philosophical view on somebody. Almost half of states have already taken the steps to protect young people from this kind of, I'm putting therapy in quotes. I actually think it's a very cruel practice. And medical organizations have been speaking out against this for decades, literally decades. And there's a growing body of research. It's ineffective. It's potentially harmful. And they're trying to drag us back. All of the progress that has been made in the last few decades on just letting gay, lesbian, trans people, just letting them live their lives is now being rolled back by an extremist court. And, you know, based on the oral arguments the other day, I don't feel confident that the Supreme Court is going to stand up and protect young people from this terrible practice. And it's very deeply troubling to me that all of the gains that we have made seem to be in short order slipping away from us because this administration has been leading the way on dehumanizing and demonizing people, and they're trying to get Americans to hate one another, and we need to resist that.
Yeah, and in 2024, messaging from the Trump campaign was that the Democrats are for they, them. That seemed to be part of a winning message. What do you make of that?
Well, the other part of that was, right, they are for they, them, you know, we are for you.
Right.
I think the we are for you part is the critically important part in understanding what's going on there, is that people feel in this economy, they feel threatened, they feel unsure of their place in their communities, in the economy. And when people feel threatened, when they feel a sense of concern for themselves or their families and their ability to survive, they go after the scapegoats that they think are to blame for their troubles. And I can tell you right now, it wasn't trans people that made your groceries more expensive. It wasn't trans people that took away your health care. It wasn't gay people who increased the tariff so dramatically that goods and services, the prices are through the roof right now. But it is giving people an easy target for their legitimate fears about the prices they have to pay, the unaffordability of housing and healthcare. So they are preying on people and instilling in them a scarcity mindset. And so one of the things that I've been trying to do in talking with constituents is say, okay, do you remember when they said they were going to stand up for you? Remember when they said they were going to lower prices? Remember when they said that they understood the struggles of working families? How's that working out for you right now? So we have to, as Democrats, as we continue to protect vulnerable groups across the country, whether it's the LGBTQ community, whether it is people of color, immigrants, refugees. We can do both things, and we have to do both things. Stand up for everybody's rights while also working so diligently to improve the economic condition of most Americans right now. And I think we have to show up listening deeply, understanding the real struggles that people have right now, and reminding them who is actually to blame for their precarious economic situation or the fact that they can't afford housing. It isn't the LGBTQ community. It is the people that passed policies that are materially hurting you. And I'm going to continue to make that case.
I mean, fear is obviously a powerful motivator. Scapegoats can be a powerful motivator. Democrats have traditionally struggled to have their message stick of being able to say, hey, we passed this program and it's helping you. What do you think it will take for that message to stick, you know, both in the federal government shutdown negotiations and in the 2026 midterms?
I certainly think that when we win the midterms, which I believe we will, we are going to continue to work on making healthcare more affordable. And I think we are going to have to make huge investments in housing. And people need to see those improvements. And we do have to be better about reminding people of the work that we've done. I mean, one of the most galling things for me right now is watching in Republican districts who did not support the infrastructure bill,
right,
that did not support the CHIPS and Science bill, taking credit for it.
Right.
And you see President Trump taking credit for things that was passed during the Biden administration. We need to be ruthless in reminding people who brought those things to your community, to your state. And I think sometimes we get so bogged down in the details of things. I always say Republicans do their work in headlines. We do ours in footnotes. And neither is great. We have to do both. You have to be able to grab the attention for people, grab people's attention while also making sure you're doing the details. But we have to be clear in our messaging, and we have to do a better job of listening.
Do you think Democrats have to be willing to play dirtier?
I don't think we have to be willing to play dirtier. I do think we need to meet Republicans right now with the same energy. And so I'm, like many Vermonters, relieved to see California fighting back on redistricting. If Texas is going to do a mid-cycle redistrict to steal seats away from Democratic districts in Texas, then we do need, if they're going to punch, we have to punch back. The detail, which I think is important for people, is that in the case of California, they've said if Texas withdraws, if Texas doesn't go through with this, then California will also disarm. That's the difference, right? Is that we know this isn't good for people or the democracy long term, but we can't continue to think Republicans are going to meet us halfway in this moment. They're not. So we got to punch back. And that doesn't mean violating the rule of law. It means not flinching when you're going eyeball to eyeball with somebody, which is why I'm so excited that House Democrats are holding the line, Senate Democrats are holding the line and saying, no, we're talking about healthcare now. That's how bullies respond.
Do you worry about false equivalencies if Democrats are pushing back? I understand there's differences in the way that, for instance, as you mentioned, California might go about its redistricting process. But are the American people going to pay attention to that nuance, or are they just going to throw up their hands and blame all of Congress?
Well, there's always that concern. But look, we're already dealing with that, right? So you've got Gavin Newsom in California. He decided as a thought experiment, right, to start tweeting exactly the way the president tweets, right? The same graphics, the same language, the same kind of tone. The press starts calling him out on it. He's like, okay, so why is it that you have allowed this to become the norm from the president. And when I am shining a light on it, you got a problem with it. So, yes, of course, that's a concern. But we have to use a lot of different tools right now to get the attention of Americans, but also of the press, to say there shouldn't be two sets of rules right now. Another example would be that disastrous speech that Trump gave in front of our military generals and leaders. I can tell you, if it had been a Democratic president that said some of the outrageous, ridiculous things that he said that were like stream of consciousness, they'd be skewered for it. But it has become so normalized. So yes, it's always a concern, but we got to do our work, and we're going to continue to do our work for our constituents, which is why Democrats are continuing to show up in the House of Representatives to do the work, and Republicans have been on an extended several-week vacation. I would like Speaker Johnson to call his people back to D.C. so we can get a deal here.
Congresswoman Ballin, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
All right.
Always happy to chat.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.